listening to this podcast right now. Do you want to hear a fucking podcast about anything and everything?
Yeah.
Like movies, music, television, and more?
Oh my God.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Yes.
Subscribe to Journey Into Comics Network, and you get Podcastrophy, hosted by me,
yes.
Dick. Why not throw a couple bucks to the Patreon? It's your choice. Yeah. This is a Podcastrophy.
That sounds so awesome.
The following is a Journey Into Comics Network production.
To a nicer guy, it couldn't happen.
I'm the man of the hour, the man with the power.
Diamonds are forever.
He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family.
And what you gonna do, Andre?
History beckons the Macho Man.
Yeah. The best there is, the best there was.
Austin 316 said I just whipped your ass.
Two words for ya.
Two words.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Hey everybody, welcome to Journey Into Wrestling. I'm your host, Brando. Joining me here today, my one and only co-host, the tag team partner. He is the Podfather himself. Nate, how's it going?
Bro, how's it doing? How are you?
Dude, I am doing fantastic here today. This is episode 5 of season 2. The lead-in show for Survivor Series. It is, I believe it's this Sunday as this show airs. We're about a week away as we record it. And so we are going to be a week, more than a week removed when we review Survivor Series and all the happenings are going down. So, Nate, the last show that we had.
Yeah.
I wasn't sold in the show yet.
Now I am.
I am 100% in.
Brando. I feel like it's so bizarre because I genuinely feel like a tornado hit the WWE headquarters and like someone got knocked in the head and they were like, wait a minute, what were we doing? We were setting up a horrible Survivor Series. Like this was going to have a low buy rate. No one's going to be interested in, no offense, Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar. The team matches aren't necessarily selling me yet. They haven't put all the pieces together. The virus thing happens and people go out and like the Shield didn't have a genuine reunion and then there's all these other things at play. And Brando, to talk about the last episode for a second, the Survivor Series we had when we last spoke and the thoughts we had on that is so different now than the card that we're getting that it's like we're doing a whole second episode to redo the episode because the WWE kind of smartened up this week. And we're going to get into that today. But Brando, I don't know about you, but I feel like if we're going to talk wrestling news today, there is something humongous that happened in the wrestling world that was not only, first of all, breaking news on Journey Into Wrestling Facebook. I saw this on our page because you posted it. That's how I got the news. So I got to get your thoughts, man. It was announced through all over the internet after it happened at the actual event. But Kenny Omega has a new challenger for the IWGP United States Championship from New Japan. It is, in my opinion, if I'm making a top 10 best of all time, he's going to the top of my list because, well, he's just always been a wrestler that I've connected with. But Chris Jericho is going to challenge Mr. Six Star himself, Kenny Omega. What do you think about that?
Really, really cool usage of social media to kind of get something going, to get like a little Twitter feud going about maybe a week or two before this challenge was made. It was kind of cool because then when it happened, the whole internet went crazy because a lot of people saw the interaction. They were like, oh, wow, okay, a little bit of a Twitter work here. Okay, cool. And because a lot of guys do that. A lot of guys kind of like mess with each other, prod each other a little bit, just kind of cut a little promo on each other. And now it's kind of coming in here. Of course, Jericho is a free agent technically.
Has been since June, I think.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, so he can go and work at the WWE. This whole thing kind of started, I guess, because Jericho is doing a wrestling cruise.
I want us to go to the wrestling cruise.
We don't have the money to go. I don't have the money to go to wrestling
cruise. We don't have the money, Brando. You're right. But it's in October of next year, 2018. They've got like wrestlers are going to be there. Podcasters are going to be there. Bands are going to be there. It's a big event. It's like 4-day cruise, you know. Jericho actually asked permission to get NXT in on his cruise.
Mm-hmm. He wanted to do a live or a NXT takeover of some sort of taping there. And I guess the Jericho and the WWE were kind of talking about it for a while. Ultimately, the WWE declined to do it. And then Jericho was like, well, I'm still doing the cruise, you know, because this is his thing. He's financially responsible for everything. So obviously he wants it to be a big success. He thought NXT would be perfect, you know. Killer brand, you know, it's doesn't have quite the fire it had maybe a year ago, but it's still going pretty strong, you know.
Yeah.
But then when that kind of fell through, then he's looking at, well, okay, then what's next? If I'm not going to do WWE, what do I want? And he wants Ring of Honor. Well, that also comes with the Ring of Honor New Japan working relationship that they have. And so, I mean, this match right here kind of sets up maybe a future thing down the line. For the wrestling cruise. So interesting that we're going to get this. I was really excited when I saw the news, of course. You know, Omega's a pretty damn good worker. And, you know, I mean, and I absolutely adore Jericho. I think he's one of the greatest of all times. I don't know if he would be at the very top of my list. My list is very, very difficult to make.
Totally.
But he's definitely up there, dude. He's definitely a top tier talent, and has been for all these years. He's been able to kind of reinvent himself so many different times. And how many different times does that happen? It's like, you know, no offense here, and I mean none, absolutely no offense, but like, you know, Austin was able to reinvent himself a few times, and then at a certain point it was like, okay, this is just kind of this legacy character. Yeah, same with The Rock. He became kind of like He evolved a little bit, and then it was like, this is what he's going to be right here. This is as far as it goes. With Jericho, he's taken risks, and they've paid off. The whole around the Jericho era where he was the no pyro, no flash, no flare. No
businessman almost.
Yes, he was just very – like he reminded me a lot of Nick Bockwinkle using big words for no reasons. You know, probably read a dictionary and thesaurus just to find new words that he could use. But I've always adored Jericho, so I'm looking forward to this. I really am. You know, the past few years, of course, you had the AJ Nakamura match, Wrestle Kingdom 10, and then 11 it was Omega and
Okada.
Okada. I was trying. I wanted to say Okada, but I didn't want to be wrong. I was like, I think it was Okada.
Yeah, they've had two. No, wait. They've had three now, right? Omega Okada's been
the wrong guy. I am not that hip.
I feel like they've had three. Japanese, I think they've had a best of three.
That may be. I am aware, but that is pretty much like when something big happens, it gets my attention. I'll go watch it on YouTube, but I don't follow it as much as I should. And really, that's just because of the sheer amount of work. Podcasting, dadding, or fathering, and
husbanding.
Number four is gaming, and you know me, that's important to me. I have a whole room dedicated to it. I don't get to do it as like the other three things come first. Oh, and somewhere in there is being a husband. I gotta do that too.
Yeah, that's just a part of the natural duties at this point, I think. You know, it's just second nature to do the husbandy thing. To brief back onto Jericho Omega here, the one thing I kind of want to talk about is Jericho's legacy versus other, like, legacy top-tiered guys all time. I look back at WrestleMania 19. I've always said it's pretty much my all-time favorite match with Jericho. Jericho Michaels, they put on a fucking legitimate clinic, stole the show, unforgettable match. And, I mean, that's one of the best pay-per-views because it had so many dope matches. I mean, you had Angle versus Brock, and you had Taker in a weird triple four, a weird situation. And
it was a handicap.
It was, but then Nathan Jones did the run-in late in the match for no reason, which was dumb. But anyways, I digress. So if you look at Jericho's track record versus the all-time best, one thing I can guarantee you is he brings out their best, no matter what, no matter who it is. I mean, he has just been, like you said, such a creator of his character and being able to shapeshift and change himself and do take risks that putting him in a match versus Kenny Omega, I mean, look, Kenny's on a different level. I don't know if you saw his New Japan promo he cut after the announcement of Jericho, but I mean, he shots fired directly at WWE, like in the hardest way, literally saying, anybody who's anybody in the business in the WWE is copying what I'm doing because I'm the guy and there's no question. And they all want to be me and no one is me, you know? So it's funny because he brings up WWE a little bit there and talks about it. And of course, New Japan's rules versus talking about other promotions, they don't give a fuck. It's not all like WWE keeping it. You can't talk about anybody else, you know, for the most part. So, you know, Omega calls him out. Jericho is going to go into this match and they are going to, I'm going to take a risk. I'm going to take a calculated risk like Jericho would take and say, if there is really a 7-star match to ever be had, Omega Jericho will have that match. Like, if it is in the cards to have a match that blows out every other match that Kenny Omega has had, and he keeps finding new creative ways to top himself, coupling that with how the being the elite channel on YouTube with the Bullet Club, the Young Bucks, and Marty Scurll and all those guys, like, they're reinventing the game in wrestling and they are the hottest thing. But Brando, I'm gonna run a little theory by you. I want you to riff me back with this. There's a little theory, running theory. Vince McMahon himself sent Jericho to have this match. Okay, so the thing is, WWE, Jericho have a good working relationship. So what, the NXT thing doesn't work out? Jericho's not going to get all butthurt over it because he's a businessman. He understands. It's a risk for Vince. He understands that maybe the risk isn't worth the reward. Whatever, it's cool. He maybe lucks out with the Ring of Honor thing anyways. Jericho v. Omega. Is Jericho opening up a line of direct communication to Vince McMahon with Omega? Who, obviously, I'm sure they've had talks before. But, and this is going to future trip into later when we're fantasy booking Raw for the 25th anniversary that we're about to have. I feel like that landmark 25th anniversary that happens, are you ready for it, Brandon? I'm going to put up a number. 2 days. 2 days after Kenny Omega's New Japan contract is done. 25th anniversary of Raw. Okay? So, Kenny Omega has also said recently, I am 100% without question staying in Japan. Almost guarantees he's gone. Everybody else, all former Bullet Club, AJ Styles, Shinsuke, they all said they weren't going anywhere and then made the shift. So I want to know from your perspective, do you think Vince has the wherewithal to use Jericho as almost a chess piece to lure? Because listen, literally the absolute hottest thing in wrestling right now has to be the Bullet Club. You watch the stuff they're doing and how they sell out ROH shows and have insane pops on these indie circuits and have lines that go around the fucking building and beyond for people to meet them. It's not happening in the WWE. It's not the same. And if you look at like some of the SmackDown numbers, they're not selling out houses. There's empty seats on the camera side. There's all this like weird stuff going on. You know, attendance is down. Viewership is down. Do you think Vince has the wherewithal to go, well, there's our chess piece. If we want to fucking win and have like everything right again, we need the Bullet Club, but I don't know how to get them on my side. Because they're very clearly not right now on the same side.
He absolutely does not have the wherewithal for that. Absolutely not. He is completely aloof. He doesn't get it. He doesn't know what's going on in the wrestling world unless you tell him. Then you show him. And then, and even then, he will not, he might not get it. He might not understand it. He sees this as like bullshit indie shit right here. He sees it as, he doesn't see it like you and I see it or anybody else sees it. As a move, as a trend, as something big happening, and at a slightly lower level in pro wrestling, but on the game, but they're using the internet. So then, if you're a wrestling fan, you are either being made aware of it, or you're into it. And so with this whole mega thing with this match, from everything I hear, the WWE were shocked by this announcement of Jericho v. Omega. They were not expecting it at all. And not that there was any panic, but I think they kind of thought that maybe Jericho would let them know. And apparently he did not.
Well, and see, that's interesting, not to say that we are disagreeing here, but I have heard reports that he actually did tell Vince this was his plan. And that's the thing in wrestling, in the dirt sheets, the conflicting stories are going to happen. So is that Vince knew to save face for the WWE? Like, put that out there that we did know so people don't think Jericho's turning tail on us. Or, I mean, the what-ifs are endless. But I'm really excited for the possibilities in this match. I'm excited for the future of wrestling. I feel like the Bullet Club, as much as they are a beautiful, nostalgic, the Bullet Club is the Stranger Things of the wrestling world. They hit you on all the notes of wrestling that you loved as a kid in growing up in the Attitude Era. These dudes grew up in the Attitude Era. They have the ability to take social media to the next level, utilize that in a brilliant way. I mean, literally being the Elite is really them on the road, sometimes really talking about shit, mixed with actual funny bits that they come up with, you know? And that's clever because it's utilizing what's out there for you now. Think about if the NWO could cut promos on their fucking phones in the 90s, what kind of weird, cool shit we would have had. It would have been insane, but we don't have that. So what do we have now? We have the Bullet Club. So I'm really excited for that, Brando. But is there anything else you wanted to add about Omega v. Jericho, or Alpha v. Omega, as he said?
Not much, but I am looking forward to seeing what else kind of happens with it. And I have heard that Jericho may be, in fact, returning to WWE at the 25th anniversary show, which would just be, coming off the heels of that big match.
It's like 18 days after that match, I think.
Because Wrestle Kingdom is usually around like New Year's, I remember correctly. Here you go. I got the link. So Dave Meltzer from the Observer or whatever.
Yeah, you got it right, Wrestling Observer.
Well, yeah. I was like, there's the Observer, and then there's a website for F4W Online. People close to the situation expect Jericho to be back in WWE during 2018, with one person saying it could be as early as the Raw 25th anniversary special. The idea in bringing back Jericho that quickly would be to capitalize on the buzz from his NJPW New Japan match with Kenny Omega. Jericho's last contractual run ended with the loss when he lost the U.S. title to Kevin Owens, and he's made a few appearances since then as a free agent. Regarding on how WWE feels about the match with Omega, it's believed that there's no issues on WWE's end. Even if there were, Jericho's a free agent and doesn't really matter. While it's possible that Jericho could have a rematch with Omega, the deal is right now for their match to be a one-off.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, the 25th anniversary of Raw is shaping up, dude.
I hear Taker might show up.
Big Kev is coming. Kevin Nash. Sean. Sean's coming back for sure. The thing with Taker, you and I are on the same page here. Because they announced on like Twitter, I think, that Sean and I don't know if they said Diesel or Kevin. I'm not sure how they billed him. But they probably tagged real Kevin Nash. Are coming to the 25th anniversary of Raw, but the picture included Taker. And, as you know, as well as I know, the last remaining two superstars who were at the very first Raw that were still with the WWE have both now retired collectively. One retiring, the other Taker retiring, Shawn, and then Shawn, also being retired. So, Taker also being technically retired, maybe not though.
Hasn't been said. It's just hasn't. Been
so I guess Taker is the last remaining dude who was on the original Raw in '93, which is amazing. So it would make sense for him to come back. That's like Howard Finkel not being at WrestleMania. He's the only guy that's been at every single one and been involved. So
now check this out. So I said this the other day, okay? I was talking to a guy from work, and he said that he hasn't watched wrestling in like 15 years.
Damn.
And we talked a little bit about it. You know, he said that he was a mega fan, and then he became just instantly almost nothing. He said he actually tuned it in maybe a month or so ago to watch. And he said he watched quite a bit of it. He just was seeing what the fuss was about. He goes, and he said he knew nobody. You know, that's how long he's been out. He goes, I knew nobody. But, you know, I was kind of like telling him how in the last few years, even with a diehard fan like me, I've been in and out. I've been like, oh, I'm watching it all the time. And then it's like, I'm watching none of it. And I'm like thinking about some big moments. And I thought about when Taker lost at 30 and the emotions that one felt. It's like, you know, I just knew, even though I was wrong, that he was done. Like, he wouldn't lose unless he was done.
Yeah.
You know, and it was probably the most shocking moment of this century as far as like outcomes you just were not expecting, especially for the build. It was like, what?
Yeah.
But that was so emotional. And then, you know, then he comes back and has another match. And then he comes back again, and he has another match. Well, actually, after that second match, the first one back, he had the matches with Lesnar, and they were good. And then, you know, he had some other stuff. And you're like, wow, okay, he's actually getting in there, you know, and doing a little bit more. And then he had the match with Shane, and it seemed like, okay, maybe he's kind of done. You know, he's riding off in the sunset. And then he had the match with Roman, and everything about that said he was done.
Yeah.
The whole after the show or after the match, the post-match Taker bit there, that was like, it's done. Everything is over. You know, he's riding off for real this time. And I swear, Nate, if he comes back again and has one more go, I'm kind of going to get mad because he's playing with my emotions.
Bro, you can't keep a dead man down.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that girl you're in love with for years, right? And then you're like, okay, it's over. You know, yeah. I guess it's really over.
6 months later, she texts you.
Yeah, and then she just keeps texting you, and then you're like, and then you have like a really good night. You know, you like get back together, and then you're like, okay, yeah, I kind of understand. Maybe this isn't gonna work. And then again, and then it's like, all right, man, for real this time, it's no more. And then I'm just waiting for that text right now, dude. I'm just waiting for my phone to light up, you know, and there's the RIP, you know. I don't want him to go, and that's the thing, you know. I want to just keep having Taker WrestleMania matches forever.
All right, well, I have a concept for you. But no, you're right, we can't. We absolutely can't because Taker's not going to live forever. Plus, didn't he just have his hip replaced? Or was that before Mania?
It was hip, knee, or
something like that, right? So here's a theory for you. If you're not going to book Taker to another match, let's not look at it like that, okay? Let's assume 33 was the end. He puts the hat down. He puts his gloves, takes his gloves off, takes the coat off, you know, and it's done. What if this Raw 25th anniversary, the reason they're booking Taker is an appearance for him to officially announce his retirement? That will lead into an induction immediately into the Hall of Fame.
That's good. I like that.
It would be beautiful. Him not, and maybe
Corbin comes out and becomes the new Undertaker.
Oh, Jesus Christ, stop it. Fuck Baron Corbin, bro. Oh, and fuck the Revival. That's a Being the Elite inside thing, if you're not watching. When Cody Rhodes started in Being the Elite, when he officially was on the indie circuit, anytime the camera would come to him, they'd be like, Cody, do you have anything you want to say? And he would go, yeah, actually, fuck the Revival. Or he'd be like, oh, look at this cool note I got, Kenny. And he'd hand Kenny Omega a note. And Kenny would be like, this is the greatest note ever. And he'd turn it around and it'd say, fuck the Revival. Or they would be like, on three, we're all going to say Bullet Club. One, two, fuck the Revival. And it's just Cody's thing. I don't know why he says that. I don't know what the heat and animosity behind closed doors is about that. But he really doesn't like the Revival. And then also, and this is another thing that makes me think Bullet Club possibly appearing in WWE in the very near future, they've started a really weird campaign called FTRR. Fuck the Royal Rumble. So I don't know. Again, I just don't know. Like, they're shooting pretty heavy shots at a major company, and I don't, and it's just hype. At this point, it's fucking hype. And look at the way the WWE has sold for the Bullet Club. There's no better fucking seller in the industry other than the WWE and how they've sold for Bullet Club. And just like, they fire Jimmy Jacobs. They fucking, you know, have suspended people. They've been pissed at people. You know, I don't know, man. Anyways, what are we moving on to, bro?
Speaking of people getting pissed off and ruffling up some feathers, what about this shit with Owens and Zayn getting sent home?
They go home during the European tour. They go home.
They goodbye. You no more paydays. You're going home. Y'all messing up. And so now, apparently, Owens and Zayn have been kind of ruffled backstage. I guess they're not happy. I mean, this is Brando thinking here. I guess they're not really happy with kind of being left off of the card entirely at Survivor Series.
After having a huge thing with Shane McMahon.
Well, and here's the thing is that, like, you got to understand that, like, okay, they're being left off the card, but come on, man, that's part of the story. You're being left off the card so you can have a big story out of that with Shane, because now Shane made sure that you guys aren't on the show at all, and it's like, okay, it's one of the big four, you're not on it. And so now the next one, you're like, I belong on here, you know? You can make a story out of it. That's my thing. But apparently they're not happy, and I guess the end of the match, I don't remember. It was singles. Was it Zayn? Was it Owens?
Which match? Oh, it was, I'm pretty sure it was Sammy versus Kofi.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
Okay.
Been a minute. I guess they were supposed to feed to the New Day, and if you don't know what that means, that is where the heel, the bad guy, keeps coming at the baby faces, and they just keep getting knocked down.
Or get taken on major bump rides, like finisher.
Well, typically, you know, you feeding them, a lot of times you use it during a comeback. You know, some guy gets on a fiery comeback, you know, he's hitting you. What do? You get up to get hit. Again, that's feeding. You're making them look good. That's feeding. One could be think that that's selling, but they're really two different things. Because you could sell, but if you're there for them to keep being in spots, to keep to where they keep their momentum, it's the defending person's job to feed. So it, like, whereas it would be the offensive person to supply the, you know, to do the whole comeback, whatever. They just dove out of the ring, apparently, and that was not what they were supposed to do. Apparently, they got reprimanded for that, and Owens complained on the tour bus and got told, go home. No more. We're tired of hearing you bitch.
Yeah. Things can get heated on those long tours, you know?
The long tour. Okay. Here's the thing is that the European tours have a habit. They're not like tours over here. You're on a bus with a whole bunch of other people. You go from town to town.
Sometimes working long, 2 dates in a day.
Yeah. So it can be long and grindy. People get pissed off. You don't have good food. You don't know the food. You don't have good. So you're taxed. You know, I mean, you're tired. You're pissy. I mean, this isn't a plane ride from hell situation here, which is something that we should look at sometime down the road. I don't know if you know all the situations of that, Nate. That was something else.
I know that it got heated. That was in the 90s, right? The plane ride from hell. Had like the click, and it had Austin.
No. That was 2002.
Okay.
Plane ride of hell, led to a lot of people getting fired.
Is that why La Resistance got fired?
No. They were around long after that. Brock Lesnar and Mr. Perfect got into a wrestling match on the plane.
Holy shit.
And bumped into the emergency exit door.
Oh, shit.
You know, yeah. Yeah, we won't go into that here. That's a whole breakdown of events. Needless to say, Scott Hall got fired, but it wasn't because of the plane. He fell asleep backstage at a show.
He's getting old, man. I sympathize with that way more now that I've hit 30, and sometimes I'm watching a TV show, and the next thing I know, the show is over, and I have taken a 35-minute power nap. Dude, I sympathize with that shit.
Me too. I hit 30, and it's like, I do this a lot. I'm like, dude, tonight, no podcasts, no kid. I'm staying up, and I'm playing me a game. Put some time into this damn thing. And I get to, like, 9 o'clock, and I'm ready to go to bed. And I'm like, should I? Can I do it? And I might even convince myself to stay up to, like, 11. But once I'm at 11, dude, I'm like, I'm going to bed.
Zombie mode, legit.
Dude, I don't have it anymore. I'm tapped, dude. Tap out. I'm old.
I feel you. I totally do.
I no longer, you know, when I was on nights, dude, before I went to nights, I was a night owl. Where even on, like, work nights, I'd stay up late. And then get up early in the morning, go. And then I go to nights, and then I'd be up until 8 o'clock in the morning because, like, then I would go to sleep, and I'd get up in the afternoon and go to work. And then I switched and came to days, and I never really recaptured that. I think I was 29. So I guess really, like, when I went back to days and I was 29, and then I hit 30. If we're going to eat dinner and watch a show, right, and it's 9 o'clock, we are not watching anything that I need to pay attention to.
Yeah, because you're liable to doze.
Well, here's the thing. I got to go to bed. So I want something that I can dip out of and just say, good night, I'm going to bed. Number two, I don't want something that I need to pay attention to because it keeps me awake.
Yep.
Number three, if I want to watch something that I want to pay attention to, leading up, I'm probably going to fall asleep. That's another reason why all of you 24, 25, 26 episode season shows can suck my ass, because I cannot watch you. I will not watch you. It is physically impossible for me to watch all your episodes, especially your Villain of the Week episodes where you spend 40 minutes of the show doing jack all, making this one character that had a run. He's an E-list villain in some book that wasn't even that character's book. It was another character that you said brought him over because they're all DC, whatever. And then the last 5 minutes of the show, they're like, dun, 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 next week on Arrow. And it's like, didn't have to watch this freaking episode at all.
I don't know if that's true. I think I can genuinely say this deep into my obsession of the CW shows, and we'll get into this maybe on Journey into Comics, because we have a whole nother podcast about this shit. But
I'm just
really,
saying, I can't do that shit anymore, man.
I think they've done a good job of making all those stories really way more interconnected, and every episode does have little bits that feed to the bigger arching story. But I do understand your Villain of the Week bullshittedness. But let's move on now, Brando. Let's get into the Survivor Series card that is totally reshaped. It starts there. I mean, there's like a lot of things to cover.
We'll start with Monday, because Monday, the New Day came out and cost Ambrose and Rollins the tag team titles.
I was actually legitimately surprised.
I was too. That's not what I was expecting to happen. And so that has now reshaped the new tag team champions. The Bar, Sheamus and Cesaro, will meet the Usos, the two tag team champions. Now, Nate, I was so mad the way they ended the Cesaro and Sheamus best of seven. And then they made them a tag team. Now, I don't want these guys to split up.
Well, duh, they're amazing together. And I love that they had they started their tag team as kind of like still bitter rivals. So there wasn't a connectedness. And then it took Sheamus showing Cesaro his inner heel to change them. And then when they got when they started, we don't set the bar, we are the bar. Like, they rebuilt their gimmicks in such a brilliant way, and it works for them. They're top guys. They deserve the belts again. I love that the Usos are who they're going to have a match against. I mean, there are some dope tag team matches that are just going to happen on this card. Like, the tag team match is one thing, but there's still a triple threat we have to talk about now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we're going to get there. But what I really like about the Bar is that they are really the Hollywood Blondes of this generation.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is that you had Steve Austin and Brian Pillman got put together because they had nothing for them to do. Austin thought he was getting a singles push, and obviously plans had changed. So what did we do with them? We got these two guys. They were literally designed to get other people over, really. So they were just put together, and what do? You know, Austin, on his end, he's kind of deflated. He's like, this isn't, I was told I was getting a U.S. title push with Harley Race as my manager. He's thinking, I just missed my shot. Now I'm stuck in this tag team. And Brian's like, no, man, you don't get it. That was Austin almost. I was trying to do a raspy Brian.
It's hard to nail Brian's voice down because he is very raspy.
But he's like, man, you don't get it, man. You know, we can do something with this, dude. We need to come up with a finish. We're a tag team. And then they, like all the stuff, the brainchild of the Blondes was all Brian. It's like, we need to match. We need to get gear. And Austin just had gear made. So then they based their gear off on the gear that Austin just had made. So that was where the Red Star was. And so they had that, and they tweaked a few things. And then Brian's like, we need to get these gold necklaces. It'll set us apart. So Austin got his gold necklace that he still wears to this day. And then they started coming up, you know, with catchphrases. I'm trying to, like, your brush with greatness or whatever, you know. That was, like, their type thing. And then they would do the whole little reel, the sizzle reel, the camera reel during the match.
Yeah.
And then they just had a nice little rapport where Brian was, like, the big the high flyer. And one would even think, like, the big talker during the promos because he kind of did more of the talking. Because Steve could talk, but he wasn't Austin. He wasn't Stone Cold yet, obviously. But
he hadn't unleashed.
But, I mean, he's still they were so entertaining. They went and they got themselves over. And then because they got themselves over, they got split up. and then by that point, they didn't want to split up. They were buds. They were like, you know, they had worked so hard.
Did they transition that directly into the Pillman Austin feud that happens? Was that them split? Is that how they split them?
They did one match with the Pillman Austin feud. Austin turned and went with Colonel Parker. And he ended up going to be U.S. champion. Brian ended up in a contract dispute, stayed away for a while, and ended up coming back as Flying Brian, and eventually would join the Horsemen. And Steve would eventually end up getting fired. And then when Steve went to ECW, got signed by the WWF, then it was like right after that, Brian facilitated a worked like leaving of WCW. He left WCW because he and Eric orchestrated it.
Damn, and I didn't know that actually.
And basically, he was going to go down to ECW, get some more heat, and they were going to make it seem like that Brian was too extreme for WCW. And then he was going to come back and try to feud with Hogan.
Interesting.
However, Brian kind of worked Bischoff a little bit. Brian was trying to go to the WWF. But I think the way Brian saw it was either way, you know, I'm out of my WCW contract. Come down here, rile up the place, rile up the internet, rile up the wrestling fans. No matter where I go, if I go where I want to go, I'm getting big money. If I go back to WCW, I'm getting big money, and they want to try and put me with Hogan. So either way, you know, he was like thinking this is going to be better for him. And then so right when he was going to be signed, he had his car wreck, which screwed him up.
Yep.
And then they did the Austin and Pillman feud. They didn't hide the fact on, you know, now this is not, they didn't come out and say it, but they alluded to the fact that Pillman and Brian were former partners and friends. They didn't say the Blondes. They didn't say WCW, but they alluded to that. And they would partner them up in talking sometimes with Brian was doing interview stuff sometimes. I think Brian had like a segment where he would do something, come out, say some wacky stuff. And of course, that ended up leading to Brian needed another, he ended up leaving for another surgery. So they used Austin to Pillmanize the, you know, the fused ankle. But getting back on track.
Sure, yeah.
With the bar, I really feel like that these guys are probably one of the better tag teams in the entire company right now. And there's a lot of good ones, a lot of good. But these guys were two single guys that came together and made the best of it in
chicken shit into chicken salad, bro.
Dude, it's the tastiest, you know, chicken salad I think I've tasted in a while in the wrestling business. This is really cool.
I feel
you mentioned a triple threat, and I think kind of what you meant was six-man tag.
Thank you. Yeah, totally fucking botched
and
that.
So what we're going to see, I really, you know, you said it seemed like a tornado hit WWE headquarters and hit somebody in the head. Really, I just think it knocked our papers all around. And then when they got their papers back together, like, oh, yeah, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. They're so just gone. They don't even know what they're doing anymore.
You just gave me a visual in my head of them in front of a dry erase board, and only certain names have been erased, and they're trying to remember what goes where. And they're just like, oh, yeah, I think we wrote AJ here, right? AJ is who we wrote with Brock. Okay, cool. But back to the six-man tag. I'm sorry.
All right, so I think what they realized here is that they have a real chance with this Survivor Series to do some dream matches. And we're getting a couple of those here. And this is one of them. The
Absolutely.
Shield versus the New Day, you know. It kind of works out because originally Roman was going to be involved in the Survivor Series team, you know, for Team Raw. For the men's. And I think they realized that they have a much better, like, what are we, and we talked about this maybe on the last episode where it's like some people are going to be left out in the dust because there's only so many spots. There's only so many matches that we can have. And really, when I looked at the match listing, I said last week a best of seven. Well, there's one match on here that isn't Raw versus SmackDown. So you're going to have seven Raw versus SmackDown matches still. If you add an eighth match into this. And so with Roman being cleared at the last minute, it seems, we're going to get the Shield versus the New Day. And, of course, the Shield's going to win because this is the first official Shield reunion match.
Since they didn't have it at TLC.
Exactly. So the Shield has to win here. But the New Day can be, you know, I think they're going to put on just a fantastic match here. Because you don't want to book the Shield being too dominant against the New Day, but I think people, you can kind of expect the Shield to be a little tougher than the New Day, and then the New Day using more of a shenanigans to try and get the upper hand.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. The thing that is interesting here is, you know, no matter how you kind of sliced it, if Roman wasn't cleared, you could still technically do this match and just have, you know, one of the New Day on the outside floating like they typically do. But I love this because you have the longest reigning tag champs of all time. Arguably, I know there's the whole debate on based on titles and whatnot. The New Day. And then they're going to... you had said that they're working on making them like the overall longest reigning as in most days with the titles, right? So that's like you have this superstar team and then you have the Shield who, like you said, they haven't had their win yet. They had their first big comeback. But I think that it is super smart and safe to say that the Shield is going to win here, like you said, because it doesn't make sense to put New Day over here. They've accomplished so much already. They have so many accolades. What is, oh, well, they beat the Shield. What's that going to do for the business? Nothing. It's not going to add to anything. The Shield winning gives Roman and the whole team huge momentum. Maybe Ambrose and Rollins challenge again against the bar when the title's back. Roman goes off to do his thing with Brock, whatever. You know, that seems like the fate we're in. So I'm looking forward to this match, but this is not the only, really two matches now have been affected because one match got added, the Shield versus the New Day, and then of course the tag title match has changed now, the Bar versus the Usos. Those are two guaranteed at least 4.5-star matches on that card, without question. I don't have to even think. I know they're going to be amazing matches that I'll want to make sure to catch and tune into with no question. There is some SmackDown change that happened, and this was a weird one because I want to just personally say I feel a little bit bad because I guess I didn't think about the fact that we spoiled SmackDown for some people like hours before SmackDown aired. I know that the internet does that anyways. That's kind of a big thing, but you know me. I try to be fair and not throw wrenches into people's plans. But major news on the UK circuit, Brando, out of nowhere.
Well, okay, here's the thing. Yeah, some people got really upset about, not us spoiling, I didn't hear anything, but for the WWE Twitter account spoiling it. And, dude, that's just the way it goes, man.
They have to now. That's protecting themselves.
But, I mean, well, and it's not like they wouldn't do it. They've done this for years. But that was just such monumental news. You do not just like, well, I guess I'll wait. No, dude, it was like boom, late breaking, big ass news because someone took their Survivor Series card and their lineup and they etch it, sketched it, and just said nope. And so they have nixed for the time being. Jinder Mahal is WWE champion, but AJ Styles in the mix. Now AJ is going to face Brock. With no buildup.
In another fantasy booking for Brock.
And for AJ at this point, because AJ has been a superstar, so to speak. I mean, no pun intended, but he has been the guy that they can look to put on some great matches and be there when they needed him, because they called him up from South America to do the match with Finn.
Out of nowhere.
You know, part of you wonders if Vince remembers that, and you know when they're thinking here, then you know, I know that they kept saying, you know, like they're not giving up on Jinder. They want to make Jinder a guy. You know, they really like the strides that he's made. They really like his mic work. His ring work has improved. Not the same Jinder that was there 5 years ago for sure. And I can attest to that. You know,
shit, not the same Jinder that was on Raw potato and motherfucking Finn Balor a week before the fucking. Brand switch.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, he fucked Finn Balor up. Did you see that? Like, Jesus. Yeah. So, no, man. The Jinder thing here, I want to get your question here. It seems to me, obviously this is all conjecture, I feel like this move is literally for Survivor Series. Like, AJ is a brilliant transitional champion here. Like, granted, AJ Styles is a champion, end of story. Like, there's no question. Jinder had a 170-day title reign. They were building it up. It seemed like maybe that build wasn't going to happen. I've heard rumors that Paul Heyman actually had a hand in convincing Vince, you need to put the belt on AJ, so it's AJ versus Brock, because that's going to sell your pay-per-view. And I think Jinder could win the title back, or if he, and we had talked about this before, since right now Jinder isn't champion, I think the last time we talked about this was in regards to Shinsuke winning the title. So now that it's AJ, you know, Jinder could totally win his title back in India.
He could. Part of the reason why I think they may be done with it is because of what we mentioned earlier about the SmackDown ticket sales.
They're severely down.
Sales overall in the company have been down, but SmackDown have been worse, and they've been having to move people around to make it look good for television. As you said, there's a whole side of the arena that is empty that we don't see, and they're careful about how they shoot things in a production. That way it looks good on television, still looks like you have an arena full of people. How pissed off would you be if you got, good seats on the non-camera side? And we're told, no, you got to move way up there now because you want this to look good on television. I would be pissed. I'm like, motherfucker, I paid for this fucking ticket.
I think it depends on if they comped the ticket. if they're like, we'll refund your ticket because that's not what you paid for, like, I get that.
Well, I guess there's that. But, I mean, but so then you're losing money. So not only are you not selling out the building, now you're paying all these people. Like,
well, so, TNA's paying motherfuckers. I don't know if you heard that. They actually hired actors in acting agencies to fill seats. That's legitimate news, Brandon. That is not a lie. They have been working closely with a casting company to hire people to be their crowd. Here, hold this sign.
WCW used to hire models.
That doesn't surprise me.
Back in the day, to be in the crowd, and the cameras would kind of focus on them because they were eye candy, you know. Oh, hey, the hot girls are there, right?
Hot girls and like wrestling. I like wrestling.
I remember there was a tape that I had when I was a kid. My dad used to, you know, get some tapes from a guy that he worked with who used to get the pay-per-views for free back then. And this dude would just tape them all, right? Well, then he taped me a copy, and I had a VHS tape that had Survivor Series 94 and Starrcade 94 on it.
Oh.
And of course, that was November and then December. So for those 2 months, I had those, and I had like Royal Rumble 95, I think was another one with something else on. Anyway, so at Starrcade, the main event of Starrcade 94 was Hulk Hogan defending the WCW World Heavyweight Championship against The Butcher.
Really?
The Butcher was Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Yeah.
Who had turned his back on his brother of many years. It was now The Butcher. He butchered their friendship. And he was main eventing fucking Starrcade.
And then he became the Disciple.
Well, before that, he became the Booty Man.
That's right. I forget that gimmick.
Well, then I can't remember if he was Booty Man first or if he was the Zodiac.
I don't recall.
Anyway, there were these two, like, women. And, like, they were, like, making noise. And they were, like, at least one of them was cheering for Butcher. Like, woo, Butcher! Doing the thing. And I'm like, after I heard the thing about models, I'm like, I instantly thought of that. I'm like, they were paid models.
to
sit there and just make noise.
But, damn. I thought when you said they're all of a sudden, like, the girls were making noises, I was like, did your dad's friend tape a porno of a wrestling? Like, is that the end of that story, you know?
No.
Is it weird that gender has the day off now at Survivor Series? That's got to suck, right? Out of nowhere?
I think he's going to be involved. I think he's going to cost AJ the title or the
match.
The match to help, like, because Brock has to win here.
Does he? I mean, is that a set in stone thing he has to win? He's not gaining anything from winning, and he's also not losing anything from losing.
He's gaining, he's on his final run.
I guess that's true, too.
He's on his final run. He's ending at Mania. He's done. 100% done. D-O-N-E. And so they're putting over Roman. A win here will solidify Lesnar's dominance. A loss for AJ will set up a gender rematch. And
possibly cost him the title. Yep.
Now, if I'm WWE, I keep the belt on AJ. Sorry, gender. But I already said before, you wouldn't have been my champion anyway. It would have been The Miz. So you're done. Sit down. AJ's a champ. Go into Rumble. Do your Nakamura match.
Maybe Nakamura wins?
Maybe.
I mean, is that hard to say? Which sets up a second match, which sets up a Mania finale? Maybe. That's kind of how I was thinking about it.
But then you'd have Roman win another Rumble. Just like, I don't want to end the pay-per-view like on a downer.
That's a downer.
I don't dislike Roman. I really don't. I've never hated Roman. I just feel very indifferent. I don't really care one way or the other. He's a good worker.
It's like he's great when he's a part of the Shield, but when you take him away, the force feeding of him to us through the WWE has affected his character.
It has affected his character. The thing is that you get him in there with the right guy, dude, and they can tear the house down. Man, he's a good kid, and he's a good worker. He's powerful. He does have charisma, but he can't. But they don't. He hasn't found his voice yet for talking. He just.
You could also put him in there with Shane McMahon and have him spear Shane McMahon to death. Call back to Survivor Series last year. Holy yeah. shit! I still remember that. That was like. Okay, in my head, I'm going, oh, Roman's going to get the rope to rope, like coast to coast. Great, cool, awesome. Out of nowhere, boom, he speared Shane, but he speared him in the fucking chest while Shane was straight up and down, and Shane went horizontal. That's awful. Like, if you're going to take a spear, take it in the stomach. He took it in the middle of his fucking chest. Like, he's lucky he didn't have heart palpitations after that. Maybe he did. I don't know. Plus, he got a concussion, I think. They said Shane had a concussion from that because he smashed his head on the mat after he took the bump. You know, he wasn't prepared to take it like that, obviously.
We don't have concussions. No concussions here.
What are concussions?
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. John Cena's back again.
Yeah.
Cena's back. Tell your friend.
Yeah, dude. Originally, of course, he was supposed to be slated to be the special guest referee with Jinder.
Probably would have cost.
Just on Team SmackDown, even though he's a free agent.
Blue brand's better. It's weird because, you know, I realized I was watching something. It was botched spots or moments that the WWE maybe wants you to forget or something, which was one of them was Brock Lesnar when he had a whole character change. I don't know if you know about this. It was like after WrestleMania 19 when he beat Angle, the next SmackDown after he won, he came out all cheerful and he was like, and I won the match, thank God. And he was like saying all this really weird stuff that you've never heard him say. Like he was a dapper, cheerful Brock Lesnar. But where was I going with that? Fucking, this always happens to me. I tangented out of one thing into another. But back to John Cena. Oh yeah, I was just gonna remark about how I hadn't seen a lot of SmackDown in like the aughts and the Ruthless Aggression era, and I realized I probably need to go through and just like for the sake of filling my brain in on all the shit that didn't make sense, because you would just get SmackDown matches and other pay per views, you know, with a quick like, here's what's been happening, and of course you read the, you know, the sheets and card and knew who won and lost back then. That's what I did anyways. But seeing it's a totally different thing. But John Cena, man, this is, it's not really a shocking thing. It would be shocking to me if, like, John Cena doesn't make it to Survivor Series because maybe he gets attacked by Jinder because it's next week. I mean, they still have a SmackDown and a Raw to go. We've obviously seen now that WWE, I think TLC, like, maybe fucked with their brains and they're like, shit, maybe last second changes on pay-per-views is fucking brilliant. It gets people talking. Like, they could still last second change, and what if Jinder just attacks John Cena out of nowhere? Like, why do you deserve to be in this match, dude? I was going to be headlining the fucking pay-per-view until well, I was...
Rusev got mad.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Rusev got mad. It's like, oh, pretty cool that Cena, you know, it is on the SmackDown team that he won that, you know, like the right that he won fair and square or something like that.
Yeah, bogus. Because didn't Rusev's match get canceled? He was supposed to have a match to determine the final spot.
Yeah, and it was
It was versus Randy. AJ.
It was supposed to be versus AJ, then they changed it to Randy, and I'm trying to remember what happened.
Well, nothing happened. They decided not to do the match, I guess.
I have slept since then. I don't remember.
Yeah. Overall, Brando, I think that Survivor Series is probably going to be a solid 4-star pay-per-view, and that's something that right now I think the company desperately needs. So I'm happy to see them proactively booking. That's all yeah. I really have for Survivor Series.
We're going to run down the card. I'll run it down.
Sure.
All the confirmed matches. Of course, we said the Shield versus the New Day. As of we record this, it has not been made official. I'm sure that as of Monday it will have been.
Yeah, they'll do it on Raw.
But Raw Women's Champion Alexa Bliss versus SmackDown Women's Champion on Wikipedia, I've just realized there is no name.
It's Natalya.
Is Natalya, but she's defending her title against Charlotte.
On Tuesday. Before the pay-per-view.
In Charlotte.
Oh, so Charlotte's winning the fucking title. Jesus. See, they are last-minuting the fuck out of this. Plus, Raw Women's Champ Alexa Bliss versus Charlotte Flair. No offense to Natty. Love her. I think she's a phenomenal worker. But I do think that's a better sell for the company.
I think so, too. Now we have the Intercontinental Champion, The Miz, versus the United States Champion,
Boring Corbin.
Star, star, star. With no name, because Boring Corbin is defending against Sin Cara.
On Tuesday?
Yeah.
Didn't Sin Cara get his fucking leg broken half by Baron Corbin? Did you see that picture?
Yeah.
Jesus, it looked fucking awful.
As of right now, the match is still on.
Interesting. I don't see them putting Sin Cara versus Miz. That's not a big... No offense to Sin Cara, but a lot of people want to watch the Miz kick the shit out of Baron Corbin, especially after the real-life heat that kind of... You know, Baron's still kind of a rookie, I guess you'd say. Like, he isn't a seasoned vet yet. You know, he's still in his first couple years in the industry, at least at this level. And he's been tweeting at the Miz and doing videos and stuff and talking shit about Maryse and talking shit about their daughter. And, dude, I've never seen the Miz look so legitimately angry at somebody when cutting a promo as he did after Baron talked about Maryse and their unborn kid. He literally said, "I will fucking end you, like, if you bring up my wife's name again." Like, they had to censor him because he did, you know, go full bore there. So while the ... asterisks thing, I don't see them switching and giving Sin Cara a push right before Survivor Series. It just doesn't help the story.
I don't either, but, I mean, stranger things.
Jesus, no joke. Oh, that's a pun or a Easter egg on something. Oops.
Team Raw, women. Yeah, this is the women's Survivor Series match. Team Raw, Alicia Fox, Nia Jax, Asuka, Sasha Banks, and TBD. Now, right before the show, I had heard that Paige is supposed to come back to the show on Monday, and she's back for the first time in a long time. And even though they already have a match set up to determine this spot, she may be put into that match or replace somebody in that match to now be the fifth person as a surprise, you know, Paige return. The SmackDown team is Becky Lynch, Carmella, Charlotte Flair, Naomi, and Tamina with Lana.
With Lana.
And I'm sure Will, what's going on with, what's his name? Dude with Carmella. Oh, come on.
Oh, James Ellsworth.
James Ellsworth, yeah.
She beat the shit out of him and said he was in the doghouse, and now he's like become a dog character. Like, she literally has him on a fucking leash, a literal leash, and, like, ties him to the fucking ring post. I'm not kidding you. But he interfered or he did something on SmackDown this week, and she kicked the fuck out. Oh, he lost to fucking Becky Lynch in a match. She put him in her submission finisher. I can't ever remember what that's called. And he tapped. And then Carmella kicked the shit out of him. Damn it, I was going to say something. It's gone. Anyways, continue on. My fault.
Oh, man. All right, so I need to get back to my page. I went to another page. We have the Cruiserweight Championship match, the Cruiserweight Champion Enzo Amore versus Kalisto. And then we have the Raw Tag Team Champions, The Bar, versus the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, The Usos. And, of course, the Men's Survivor Series matchup. Team Raw, captained by Kurt Angle, featuring Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, and Jason Jordan, to meet Team SmackDown, captained by Shane McMahon, with Randy Orton, Bobby Roode, Shinsuke Nakamura, and John Cena.
All-star team. That is a legitimate all-star team. Like, the Raw team is not quite all-star. You got Jason Jordan. He's a young dude. You're trying to give him the he's almost going to be – who was that? Was it CM Punk who was kind of early in his career, did a Survivor Series match with DX, ended up being like one of the last dudes. Mm-hmm. They gave him a big push, but then ended up that he didn't win the match, but he was, you know, a rookie dude. So maybe they're going to do something like that with Jason Jordan. It's interesting. Of course, the Roman Reigns news changes all that, because if Roman's not healthy, they have to prepare for him not to be on Team Raw, which is what they prepared for. they overprepared because the news didn't come down that Roman was getting cleared until late, and they wanted to cover their asses. So now we're getting a Shield versus New Day match. It's going to be phenomenal.
Well, as you said, you could still do two members of the Shield versus two members of the New Day.
If
Roman wasn't coming back. But now with Jason Jordan, you could tie that in storyline-wise with Kurt Angle, even though Jason Jordan has been kind of a popcorn fart.
What? What is that phrase?
A popcorn fart?
You're killing me. I've never heard that before. That's incredible. Hashtag just, best of clip. I'm just saying.
Dude, he's not getting over. And I could definitely see them turning him heel eventually if he just continues not to get over. But with this, you have a chance to another chance to try and get him over by having him rub shoulders, you know, with his you know, kayfabe dad Angle in there with Randy Orton and John Cena and all these guys, and have him have a chance to go in there and tie it up with these guys. Would be pretty good for him. And, of course, the last match, the Universal Champion Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman versus the WWE Champion AJ Styles. Holy crap. I'm probably going to skip Walking Dead to watch this pay-per-view.
That is insane to hear you say, because that is one thing that you don't do. Like,
yeah.
Since I've been friends with you and we've been on the Walking Dead kick and done this podcast together, and like since The Walking Dead has been a thing in your life, I don't think you've missed ever.
I still haven't watched last week's.
Well, but that was circumstantial a little bit.
Well, kind of, but then we've had time this week to watch it. We still just haven't done it.
Binge it tomorrow, dude. Shit, watch it right before this new episode. You'll be real refreshed.
Well, that is real refreshed. Well, definitely, it'll be fresh in the mind. That kind of like harkens back to the conversation we had about, you know, being old, or not old, but
older.
Being older, being 30, and just like, yeah, dude, we got time tonight. And then you're sitting there going,
all right, anyway, bro. Dude,
that
go ahead.
Is our Survivor Series lineup. Now, I think there's going to be about one more thing that we want to talk about. I kind of want to save the 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary.
Closer.
Until we get closer. We don't have to do that now. We're a bit far ways out. But we have a new segment that we do now called the Random Highlight. We've been doing it every week here now. And, guys, what that is that we have a list of 10 wrestlers, superstars, whatever you want to call them. And we have a random name picker. And we get one picked at random every single week. And now this is the third week that we've done that. First week we had the Hitman Bret Hart. The second week we had the Rabid Wolverine Chris Benoit. And, of course, we got 10 names here. And I'm not going to say them right now. What we'll do is that we'll read the names after the segment so you guys kind of know who's all here if you've listened to all these episodes.
It's weird because we're actually hoping that one name doesn't get picked this week.
Right, yeah, because we kind of want to save it. But yeah, this is all random. So if you listen to last week's episode, you know exactly who's on this list. I just kind of think it's cool because you guys just don't know what's kind of like what's going to pop up here.
It's so random. I don't know if it's actually random. Brando could just be like, "Hey, it's this one." But here's the thing: I know Brando. He's a good person. He doesn't bullshit me. If it's random, he's put the effort in. Especially if he has to type some shit and do something that's kind of a fun thing, he's enjoying this. So please take it away, random highlighter raider.
Here we go.
Highlighter Raider.
Click. Sting.
Oh, yes. It's like, yes. That's great news. Sting is one of my all-time favorites. He's actually who got me mostly heavily into wrestling. I can recall all the way back to when I was a kid, and they had the L&J figures, and one of my friends had like the Hollywood Sting when he was like a beach blonde and had the pieces of the face paint. Of course, that kind of first got me piqued on the interest of him as a character, and then when I started really watching wrestling was literally 96 going into 97, so the transition of Sting, you know, the first year I saw Sting, he was just in the rafters. Just in the fucking rafters. That's what he was doing, spending his time in the rafters. And that was like, that was 97's lead up. They did that at the start of 97 all the way to Starcade, the build for Hogan.
Yep. Man, Sting. When did I first see Sting? Now, it had to have been early 90s. As I said, I around 1990, I was aware of the Hogan Warrior match. And I knew who Hogan was. It was one of those things where you knew who he was, but you don't remember exactly where you first saw him. Same with Warrior. It was the big majesty of it all. But then my dad, he would just randomly turn it on every once in a while, wrestling. And, of course, WCW aired on Saturdays. I think they had a Saturday morning show, then they had a Saturday night show, and then they had a Sunday night show. So WCW Saturday night, every once in a while, like, he would just turn it on. And, you know, I got confused because I thought Sting was, like, Ultimate Warrior. You know, it's kind of funny because they started at exactly the same time. They had the face paint.
And even tag team at one time at the very beginning.
Yeah, they were the Blade Runners.
Yep.
But flash forward a little bit. 92 is when I really start paying attention. And so then if I flash forward a little bit further, and I didn't start watching WCW religiously until Hulk Hogan came over in 94.
Okay.
And this is where I know who Sting is. I know who he is, but I hadn't been watching him yet. And, of course, Sting was the number one babyface in WCW. Now he's number two.
He carried that company on his fucking back.
Dude, he did. And now Hogan's in. He's number two, so he's second to Hogan. And but he's Hogan's buddy. And I remember that 94 storyline where Hogan finally bested Flair at Halloween Havoc in the retirement match in the cage. That's where they revealed that the masked man who had attacked Hogan at Clash in August was none other than Brother Brudeye. And that set up the feud between Hogan and the Three Faces of Fear. And the Three Faces of Fear were The Butcher, Avalanche, a.k.a. Earthquake, and Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, didn't they do like the Dungeon of Doom during that Kevin, story?
That was after.
That was after,
Dungeon
okay.
of Doom is after because after the Three Faces of Fear fail at killing Hulkamania, Kevin Sullivan goes crazy and then ends up wandering in the woods and finding the beginning of the Dungeon of Doom thing. I just remember him walking. He's in his wrestling gear, tights, boots.
Just in the woods.
He's running in the woods.
This is does not make any sense. You should just wear regular ass attire. Damn it, Kevin Sullivan, you weird ass.
Anyway, so I remember the lead up with Clash of the Champions in November of 94. It was Hogan, Sting, and Dave Sullivan, Evad. It was Kevin Sullivan's brother who had dyslexia.
Evad, Dave backwards.
Yes.
That's genius. Evad Sullivan. And I bet and so would, many people didn't promos, fucking get it.
Would, in his promos, he would say things wrong repeatedly.
Out of order.
I remember, like, it was a storyline because it started off like he would be like, it was a storyline for Kevin, where like Kevin would have to carry his brother in a tag team or whatever, you know, and eventually they had a blow off match. Well, Evad was a big Hulkamaniac. So then when he joined Hogan, that was just another, like, that was the last straw, right? But Dave feuded with was one of the first feuds for DDP, and every Saturday morning, DDP would challenge people to arm wrestling, and the winner got a date with the Diamond Doll.
Ooh,
of course that's Kimberly. Well, Dave was the first one to actually beat, or Evad, the first person to actually beat DDP, and on the date. He's like, I'm taking her to see the King Lion.
The King Lion instead of Lion King? That's awesome. That's not even how dyslexia works, hilarious. Well, I guess it can work that way, but that's not like the most common form of dyslexia But that's, I guess I didn't know about Evad Sullivan.
Anyway, so during the match, I think Evad got hurt, leaving only Sting and Hulk. I remember Sting at Starrcade faced Avalanche, and then seeing Sting kind of come through, starting off for me, he was playing second fiddle to, you know, to Hogan. You know, then you had the first Nitro where one of the, not the main event, but probably like the other minor main event was Sting versus Flair. Really solid match to go with because they have such a history. And of course, that was the first appearance or the reappearance of Lex Luger to WCW after crossing over from the WWF. That was the big
Mall of America.
Yeah, that was at Mall of America. Now, to go back a little bit, one of the best matches you'll ever see of Sting is the first Clash of the Champions. Then I want to say that the first Clash of the Champions, that would be in 88, maybe. It's 88 or 89. It's 88. So that clash went head to head with WrestleMania 4.
Damn.
With WrestleMania 4 being on pay-per-view and the Clash being on free television. And it was headlined by Ric Flair defending the NWA world title against Sting.
Shit.
And it went to a 45-minute draw.
Damn.
Awesome.
Flair as champ going in?
Yes.
Okay.
It was Sting's first big match, first big main event match.
And they went to a time limit draw.
Yes.
Fucking A. What a way to kick it off.
And then they had judges at ringside, right? And the judges reached a split decision. So it was a draw anyway. But then you go into 90, and then Sting finally wins the title against Flair at the Great American Bash. And that sets him up as the guy for WCW. And then of course, Sting has been there throughout some of the big moments of WCW, dude. He was there for the debut of the Shockmaster.
The Failmaster. Oh, God. He was trying to, that was supposed to be like a badass moment, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
Fifth member for team, was that WCW?
No, that or was, what? They were doing War Games.
That's right.
And it was going to be Sid Vicious, somebody else, I'm drawing a blank here, and...
Because you know as well as I know that I have half the brain that you do. Psycho Sid.
But Sting's team was going to be like Davey Boy, Sting, and the Shockmaster. And out pops, was it Fred Ott? Of course, Tugboat, Typhoon from WWF. He's coming to WCW, and he's a Shockmaster, and he's this dude with the glittery Stormtrooper helmet, and Ole Anderson off to stage right doing the voice over for the promo. He's like, "I am the Shockmaster," as he's trying not to laugh from watching Shockmaster bust through the wall, fall flat right on his fucking face. Boom,
oh,
boom.
Shit.
Helmet falls off. Stands up, puts it back on.
It's amazing.
I have heard that Dusty was laughing so hard they had to move him to the back to another room.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's such a fail.
This is Dusty's brainchild here.
Also, didn't Dusty say to somebody, whoever it was doing the props, like, you know, the Stormtroopers, like a shiny Stormtrooper helmet. Like, he kind of just like roughly gave them the idea, and they literally gave him a shitty, glittery Stormtrooper. Fucking Stormtrooper helmet. Ridiculous. These moments in wrestling are why I'm a fucking fan, Brando. That moment, and then like, wasn't it Scott Steiner that tried to throw Christian into the apron and it's the
DNA?
DNA,
oh God. And then Christian's like, whoop.
We could do a whole show on epic fails.
Sting, of course, he transitioned from the blonde surfer look. He grew his hair out, and it was kind of a he had the same Sting look, but he kind of had brown hair. And then, of course, that transitioned. The NWO comes in. They do the angle where Sting joins the NWO, but it ended up being a fake Sting.
Yep.
Because they had war games. It was WCW versus NWO. And the fake Sting came out, and then the real Sting came out, cleaned house, and then left. Turned his back on WCW and on the fans, telling them, anybody, if you're with me, awesome, cool. If you're against me, then you can stick it. That was a one-year lead-up for the biggest flop in wrestling history. because, well, like, they just, man, it was like
oil and water.
Huh?
It was like oil and water in that match?
Well, no, the match was okay. But Nick Patrick was supposed to do a five count, or a fast count. But Nick Patrick's count is so slow that his fast count is a normal count.
One, two, three.
And then Hogan's like, yeah, I won. And then because Bret Hart was supposed to come out and go, no one's getting screwed tonight.
Yeah, because they were in Montreal, right?
No, they were in Washington, D.C., I think.
But this was just after the screw job.
Like a month later.
Month.
And Brett was a licensed referee for the night because he had guest refed another match. So he came out, restarted the match, Sting won, and got his world title that night. Well, I mean, he had several by that point. But then, of course, they just kind of botched the story a little bit. Going into 98... Then you had the story of the formation of the Wolf Pack and Sting joining
the Wolf
Pack,
yep.
Having the red and black look and
goatee Sting. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The full facial hair.
Dude, there was a whole theory. Like when we were kids, people were like, "Dude, that's the Undertaker." Like,
I never heard that. That's hilarious.
It's like, dude, he's got the long hair, the goatee. It's the Undertaker. He's like, dude, Sting must be sick or something. He must be like. He's in a different fucking company.
Doesn't work that way, bros.
Christopher Kidd's like, dude, I swear to you, it's the Undertaker. I'm like, what about the tattoos? Makeup, man.
They don't even realize. I'm like, did you realize Sting's face comes off and during matches? Think about if he had shit on his arms.
No shit. Anyway.
I want to talk about a match that I think it is still a L in the column of losses for Sting. But it was one of the coolest matches, in my opinion, growing up. And that was Sting v. Goldberg. Sting technically beat Goldberg. Yeah. He ended the streak. However, controversy, the match doesn't actually get finished there. Goldberg picks up an emergency win and goes on to carry the streak even longer.
Was that the one where Hogan got involved?
Mm-hmm. Sting has Goldberg in the sharpshooter. Goldberg is literally getting ready to tap the mat. Sting has, and the Scorpion Deathlock, my fault. Oops. That's just, sorry. Anyways.
I'm like, dude, I fixed it. Like sacrilege.
It's the same goddamn move, okay? It's the same move.
But they do it differently. I remember, like, Sting is, like barely holding it on still. Like,
correct.
Like,
and Brett sits the fuck down. Brett pretty much sits.
Well, Sting kind of like, he doesn't get his low, but, what I was talking about is that when he had it on Goldberg, like, Goldberg, like, he was, like, having such a hard time holding Goldberg's legs up that he was, really lower down than what he normally is. He's really trying to put pressure on there, or at least look like it. And, it looked like Sting was holding on for dear life, and then Hogan comes in and
pulls the ref.
Kind of foils it, but... You know what? I just remember, like, after WCW closed, you know, you wonder, would Sting ever make it to the WWF? And then, well, he ended up going to TNA and continuing his career down there. And, you know, he had some pretty cool moments and matches. He ended up main eventing
the Mafia.
Huh?
I said he ended up main eventing the Mafia.
I get it.
Aha.
But it was the first couple of Bound for Glories he was in the main event. See, the first one he main evented against Jarrett with Angle. Or no, that was Bound for Glory 2, my bad. But Bound for Glory 2, he main evented against Jarrett with Angle as ref. I want to say he did it again with Joe.
I think so, yeah.
And but like they gave him like a first couple of years that he was there, they gave him some title wins. He won the NWA title there, and then he of course transitioned when they transitioned away from that to the TNA title. He won that, and he was a big star that they could put their hat on down there, saying that we've got Sting, and he was a company man there through and through. It's funny because he was always like, well, I'm not going to go to the WWE. I'm kind of afraid of what they do with me. Besides, I'm not really, I'm more of a Christian guy now. I'm not really in tune with what they're doing. I'm more of a family-friendly guy. Meanwhile, WWE went PG and TNA were doing some of the shit they were doing.
Yeah, totally ass backwards, but I think that's how it goes. TNA with Sting births a really bizarre moment that we can't avoid, and that is maybe the worst match ever in TNA history. TNA's Jeff Hardy versus Sting. Of course, we know Jeff went to the ring super fucked up, well beyond saving. He could have hurt.
Not have let him go out.
Correct. And that's a Dixie Carter right there. Dixie Carter's name all over that. Oh, yeah, sure, go wrestle. You'll be fine. It's just a match. You'll be fine. He didn't even know where the fuck he was. Sting had to literally hit him with the Scorpion Death Drop and fucking hold his shoulders down like, you are losing this match because you have no other option. And I feel that Jeff was probably supposed to win that match.
Because they told him, you're just going to lay down. And Jeff was so messed up that, yeah, Sting had to do that. I don't know what the finish of that match was going to be. But it doesn't really matter because, I mean, that's a dark point in Jeff's life and his career. But it's also like a dark point in TNA. I don't understand. Like, you're not selling that pay-per-view to that many people to justify number one, putting Jeff in danger of any danger. I mean, he's obviously messed up, but most of all, putting Sting in danger. A guy that's been around forever. He's probably like at that point. What year was that? Was that Victory Road? Was that
07?
No.
Later?
No, it was later than that because this was the Hogan Bischoff era.
You know what? It would have been like, okay, hold 11. On. I met Jeff Jarrett. I think it was 11 because I think I met Jeff in 2010. No. Yes. It was definitely 2010 when I met Jeff. So, yeah, he was definitely fucked up. And they risked two performers' careers in that move. I mean, literally, if Sting isn't as veteran as he is and doesn't realize what's going on and take control of that situation, and let's say Jeff tries a top rope move and falls flat on his fucking neck and dies right there in the ring, it's over. The company's done. Like, no question. They had no reason to risk that. But let's move back into the good side of Sting, because on the other side of TNA, and he did a lot of things, like you said, Main Event Mafia and multiple title reigns and different variations of his character. He had some classic matches with AJ and Joe and, Angle. I mean, the whole thing, Sting was great in TNA. I think him leaving was starting the coffin nails happening in that company faster and faster because he was the first big domino to fall.
Yeah, and then, of course, he winds his way up. And finally, after all these years, was it in 2014?
Yep.
Went to the WWE. In fact, was that 2014 or 2013 that he made his first actual debut? Well, no, was it 2014 Survivor Series?
I think so, yeah. The shocking, yes. He just showed up in the ring.
That was the Survivor Series match. It was the Authority versus Team Cena.
That's right.
Triple H is trying to screw over Ziggler. And then Sting comes out and lays out Triple H. And that's when, like, Rollins and Ziggler laid in the ring for, like, 15 minutes. Somehow, Ziggler still got the damn win. Like, the longest sell for a finisher ever. It's like Ziggler hit Rollins with the zigzag, and then Rollins went into a coma for a
he took a coma in the middle of the ring.
But you know, that, yeah, that was pretty mind blowing. And then they did the whole Triple H and Sting match at Mania. You know, Sting got to have his Mania match, even though it wasn't against Taker. It was still a pretty damn good match. Those two put on a really good match, and you had the whole
legendary run-ins.
Yeah, you have the endless run-ins of DX, and then the NWO, and then Shawn Michaels, and it's like, gosh, man, what else is gonna get crammed into this damn match? And Sting ended up losing both endeavors. I think he had three matches in WWE.
Yeah, the last one was the one that ended his career against Seth. Yeah,
against Seth, but you know, the Triple H match is just such a highlight, even in losing an effort. Such a great moment and a good cap off to his career. Especially to have all those guys around, you know, like, you know, like the, you know, from back then, from back in the old Attitude Era, or like the Monday Night Wars, for a second that kind of got revitalized, you know, with these old guys. You know,
yeah,
it's almost like what they used to say, like a lot of times when you would have like a big wrestling event, some of the old timers would like get together and they would just get lost in their nostalgia. And it's almost kind of what happened here, you know?
Absolutely.
Suddenly got the DX spirit. Suddenly got like, oh, pull out the DX shirts, huh? Let's pull out the NWO shirts, huh? Yeah, uh-huh. And pretty cool moment for them. But then, of course, the Seth thing, I'll never forget. That was actually really cool. And while I had heard and had been reading the sheets about Sting coming in, because they did the – I think that was the year they did the video game for Sting was when he
came in.
So you're almost half expecting it at that point. But then when they did the Seth reveal where they were going to have Seth's statue and they revealed it and it was Sting, and the crowd went nuts.
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh, and they also did the one, I'd definitely be remiss if I didn't say this, the one moment where it was like Orton in the ring and he was surrounded by the Authority. And then, you had the lights go out and Sting is in the ring with him with the bat. And Randy has like the chair, and then they're like standing back to back, and Randy's like kind of dawning on him that Sting's in the ring with him. And he's like, and then they both just start swinging.
At like yeah. 40.
Pretty cool
shit.
Moment. But
Sting's had an awesome career.
He has, dude, a lot of titles.
He's in two Hall of Fames.
Yeah, dude, he's definitely Hall of Fame worthy. You know, he's been there throughout the years. He, you know, maybe you wish he would have went to WWE a lot earlier and we could have had a lot more dream matches. But you know, that sometimes that's not where life takes you, and it definitely wasn't for this. But because we didn't get to see Sting and Taker, Sting and
Michaels. You know,
Michaels or anything like that, we did get to see Sting and AJ and Sting and Joe.
Yeah.
You know, and then Sting Eagle. So we did get some of these big, awesome moments from him.
They just didn't happen on the TNA or on the WWE brand. They were TNA things, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Listen, in wrestling, here's one thing I want to say that's very important. It shouldn't matter where the match happens, ultimately. Mm. It should be, if the match is phenomenal, it's fucking phenomenal. End of story. Okay. So you're right that it is cool that we still did get amazing matches. And I mean, think about it. Sting was still pretty much in his prime when he was facing AJ, when he was facing Joe, and then they were not even in their prime, still hungry and coming up and working on the craft. So they are, that's an era of TNA that's definitely very special, I think, that we can't, you know, when you talk about the death of TNA and how things have been bad, that's one of those eras that is just, it is the gold in the shit pile, you know?
All right, so as I said, I'm going to read off the names that are here. We have 9 names. Of course, we have 10 every week. Of course, still on the list here is Ric Flair.
Woo!
CM Punk, Scott Hall, and Chris Jericho. And then we have the Ultimate Warrior, Edge, John Cena, Magnum TA, and Stone Cold. Sting was my pick, I do believe.
Sure, replenish that pick, brother.
And so I am going to do Trish Stratus.
Oh, I love that. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So now that is the first female on the list.
She's not going to be the last either.
No, no, absolutely not. But I was trying to think, it's like, man, who could I put on here? And I'm like, trying to rack in my brain here just a little bit. And I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Like if I was going to pick a female, who would I do? And the first name that popped in my head was Trish.
Bingo. Lita would have been my first, but me and punk rockers, man, you know.
I know, man. But I think that's going to do it for us this week as we lead into Survivor Series, guys. I'm really looking forward to the pay-per-view now. Last episode, I was just not into it. As Nate said, some of these big last-minute changes are kind of like keeping you on the edge of your seat, man, almost making it like week-to-week you have to be watching. And it hasn't been like that for a long time. Not anywhere near Crash TV and, you know, Russo era. But still just enough to make you go, what the hell happened tonight? Because in 1 week we had new tag champions and a new WWE champion. And then next week we may have a new women's champion and we may, or SmackDown women's champion, and we may have a new US champion.
I see.
Don't know.
Oh, wait. No. You're right. Baron is the US champ. I'm sorry. I fucked that up. Yeah, Brando. They've done a great job. Definitely keeping my interest in the WWE. As I've said, I'm venturing more into learning about ROH stuff. I don't know if I said that on air or not, but I want to definitely educate myself so that moving forward with this show, if we're covering stuff and there is big ROH news, or if there's interesting things that have been happening, or if there's anything that's worth talking about, we can cover it. Because I feel like the WWE is great and all. We can't really cover TNA because it's a lot of down news. There's not a lot of up news.
There hasn't been an uptick or any sort of like good reason to cover like TNA or Impact Wrestling or GFW or, you know, the Impact Maple Leafs, whatever they're being called now.
I watched the Bound for Glory highlight show thing that I watched. That's like just a clip of like all the major points of the show.
Johnny Impact lost.
Yeah, because of fucking Alberto El Patron. Okay, so that's weird. But then, like, the other thing is there are just, like, random matches. There was one match in the middle of the show that was in a different ring, not in TNA at all. What? Like, it was a four-sided ring with chicks and not a six-sided ring, and it was a totally different... I don't understand why they did that. Maybe somebody can elaborate on why they do that in TNA, but or Impact or GFW or fucking Anthem or The Owl. I don't know what they're calling their fucking selves anymore.
All right, so have you seen the meme whenever someone leaves WWE and then they, like show up in TNA as, like, they just kind of reverse some of the letters and the names?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought of, like, what if Johnny Knoxville... were a WWE wrestler, and you get that same meme. It's like, look who's in the Impact Zone. It's Nonny Jocksville.
Nonny Jocksville. Oh, that's awesome. Maybe that's the episode title, Nonny Jocksville.
That doesn't make any sense for the rest of it, though.
You're right. That's too short of a moment.
But I think it's going to do it for us this week, Nate. Really cool to sit back and talk some wrestling with you. I'm really looking forward to reviewing Survivor Series and seeing where the hell we're going from here, because, Nate, it's almost WrestleMania season again.
Woo! I'm so excited. It's the best, most wonderful time of the year. Of course, WrestleMania season means it's cold outside. It also means we're about to have Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's and fucking Valentine's Day. My birthday happens after. But Saint fuck Patty's yeah, WrestleMania! Day. St. Patty's Day, I forgot that one, yeah.
Pi Day.
Pi Day, oh yeah, 3.14.
That is The Rock's favorite day.
Yeah, if you smell what he's cooking.
All right, guys. Thank you for checking out this episode of Journey to Wrestling right here on the Journey to Comics Network. Of course, you can find us all over the interwebs on podcast services. You can just search the Journey to Comics Network on some of your favorites, the iTunes, the Podbeans, the Stitcher Radio, the Google Play Musics. We're on the JourneyToComics.com. You can check out all of our great shows that we have to offer there. You can also check out the Patreon. You want to get the show up to a week early, you can just throw a buck, throw a three. Throw a $3 bill. Do I hear a four? No, just three. Sold for three. You get extra content every single month for some of the shows here on the Journey to Comics Network. Nate,
bro.
Thank you for joining me once again this week. I can't wait to talk to you again. Oh wait, we're on social media, aren't we? Yes, we're on the Twitter. They got some changes going on over there. We're at JIW on JIC. We're on Facebook, Journey to Wrestling. We've been posting some, trying to post more over there, trying to get some stuff going. So when stuff happens, we'll spoil it for you.
We've been trying to keep up on all this late breaking wrestling news because it's actually been crazy enough that, like I said, between our two episodes, it's like we've had a whole nother pay per view added to this thing.
It's definitely, you know, it's definitely different. It has changed, but can't wait to talk to you about that on episode 6 of season 2 of Journey to Wrestling. Until then, I'm Brando.
I'm Nate.
And we will see you then.
Goodbye, bang, and good night.